Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's deputy editor, digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hey, Keith.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I am splendiferous.
Oh, great.
And splatagical.
Oh, those are just made up words.
I think that might be an organ in my body that we just discovered.
You're de-lovely, delightful.
And delicious. That's weird. Okay, anyway. As always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we'll be talking about what albums we're most looking forward to hearing later this year, and ones that we're really hoping come out in 2018.
Plus, we've got chart news about Jack White, The Weeknd, Drake, and Shawn Mendes.
And we've got an interview with Ali Alexander of Years and Years. The singer-songwriter called in from London to chat about the new video for Sanctify, their upcoming album, and even how he recently had a dream about Ed Sheeran and Britney Spears collaborating. That really needs to happen.
Yes.
So stick around for that in just a little bit.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. Let's run the Billboard chart numbers and do the chart chat. Here are three of the biggest headlines on the charts. First up, Jack White claims his third number one album on the Billboard 200 chart as the rocker's third solo studio effort, Boarding House Reach, opens atop the tally. The set earned 124,000 equivalent album units in the week ending March 29th, according to Nielsen Music. And of that sum, 121,000 were in traditional album sales, which is the largest sales week for a rock album in 2018. And as we said last week, a lot of that sum, or a hefty number, was encouraged by sales generated from a concert ticket album sale redemption offer. In addition, the album actually racked up a big sales figure from its vinyl LP, 27,000 sold, in fact. The handsome performance was expected considering how White is a champion of the format, and the album's vinyl sales actually represent the fourth largest week for a vinyl set since Nielsen Music began tracking sales back in 1991. Next week on the Billboard 200, watch for The Weeknd to debut at number one with his surprise album, My Dear Melancholy. The set was released last Friday, March 30th, and is on track to earn over, well, I don't want to go with a number just quite yet, but it's going to be a robust number, but it should definitely be number one. Stay tuned to Billboard.com for all stories about how big we think The Weeknd might be. But it should easily be number one, according to industry forecasters, as we say. Next up, Drake's God's Plan hits a 10th week at number one.
Whoa.
On the Billboard Hot 100, and it shows no signs of giving up the top slot. A 10th week, Katie. 10.
10 weeks. It was God's plan.
Clearly. It was divine chart intervention.
Exactly.
God's Plan is actually the 36th song to spend at least 10 weeks at number one in the nearly 60-year history of the chart. By the way, the chart turns 60 this August.
Oh, what are we going to do? Like, can we throw a party?
Sure. I mean, yeah.
Retirement party?
No. No.
I mean, 60 and thriving party?
60 looks better than ever on the Hot 100. It wears it well.
Indeed.
There is no gender specified to the Hot 100.
Still as hot as ever.
I mean, you know, it's equally groups, men, women, everything and anyone is the Hot 100.
Gender neutral Hot 100.
Yes. Well, God's Plan now gives Drake 2 10-week runs at number one as One Dance, featuring WizKid and friend of the podcast, Kyla.
Aww. I love her.
Yeah, also spent 10 weeks at number one. He almost got a third 10-weeker as his featured turn on Rihanna's Work spent 9 weeks at number one. By the way, we've only had 3 number ones on the Hot 100 this year.
I don't love that. I like when things take turns a little more. So yeah, we need a little more variety up there.
That's what we have the Billboard 200 for.
This is true.
There's a new number one album almost every week.
This is true.
It's actually, I'm sort of endlessly annoyed by it, but it's just the way the math works.
Well, and the whole point of it is to show the most popular single in the country, and sometimes that is the same thing for 10 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
As evidenced by Drake.
It's annoying, though. I mean, I was just very, you know, if you look back at the chart in the 80s, like, you had a new number one, like, every, like, 1, 2, 3 weeks.
Well, people were throwing some special sauce at the charts back in the 80s, though.
They were not. The charts were actually completely legitimate in the 1980s.
I mean, wasn't SoundScan.
It wasn't Nielsen. So, yes. You know, it was just the chart operated differently. Yeah. So that's just the way it worked.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
It was a fun time, yeah. Everyone got a chance to be number one. Not so much anymore. Well, Ed Sheeran's Perfect, which spent 6 weeks at number one in both late 2017 and early 2018. God's Plan and Camila Cabello's Havana featuring Young Thug were the 3 number ones this year so far. And Camila was only number one for 1 week.
1 week, it yeah. I'm glad she snuck in there.
Thank God. perhaps we'll see one of The Weeknd's new songs released just last Friday.
The Weeknd, new The Weeknd.
Bump Drake from number one, or maybe Cardi B might surprise with one of her new tracks from her upcoming album. We shall see.
Invasion of privacy.
Ooh la la. Lastly, Shawn Mendes shoots into the top 40 on the Hot 100 with In My Blood, giving the singer-songwriter his 7th top 40 charting single. The song vaults 72 to 22, a big 50 places, after its full first chart tracking week. Fun fact, Mendes has notched at least one top 40 hit in every year since 2014. He's clearly doing quite well right now. In My Blood is from Mendes' forthcoming 3rd full-length studio album, which is due out later this year.
So now that the first quarter of 2018 is over, yes, already, we're done with the first quarter.
Crazy.
Let's talk about some of the year's most anticipated albums, at least according to the Pop Shop team.
Us.
Yeah. According to Keith and Katie.
Yeah, basically.
Really, there are very few definites in the world of music, obviously, when it comes to release dates. You know, we literally ask every person we interview, like, when's the album coming out?
Ooh,
sometimes they're coy. Sometimes they truly have no idea because they're at the mercy of their labels or whatever.
Or they're like, this year? I'm like, yeah, that's like 8 months. I hope it's this year.
Yeah. So, you know, we do know, as we said, we had some fresh The Weeknd come out. We have Cardi B coming April 6th. We know about these things. But what else are we looking forward to?
We know about one of those things because it sort of dropped out of the sky.
That's true. Yes, yeah. We know because it's here.
Yeah. We know it exists now.
You asked us last week, we would have said, who knows when The Weeknd's coming?
But yeah, things in the future, a little bit harder to figure out. But,
yes.
But at least we know that there are people that are working on new music, which perhaps can come out this year.
Yes.
And there are a few things that we certainly know are coming. So I'll start.
Let me guess who you're going to start with.
I don't know. Who?
Madonna?
Maybe. Can she come back after a couple albums, namely Rebel Heart and MDNA, that didn't perform to normal Madonna expectations?
Yes.
She recently griped on Instagram about working in songwriting camps with a range of writers for her last album, an experience that she seemingly didn't like. So does that mean she'll go back to just a small handful of collaborators for her next album, as she did with such high water marks in her career, like Ray of Light, Music, and Like a Prayer? We shall see. I certainly hope so. I would just hope that she just does an album of music that she sincerely believes in. It doesn't have to be like hit stuff.
Yeah.
Like, stop trying to make a hit single.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know if she can get another quote unquote hit top 40 track. Like, just make music that you believe in.
I mean, now disagree. Please disagree with me if I'm wrong. But would you say that Confessions on a Dance Floor is like the last, like, critically acclaimed / Madonna fans embraced album.
I probably.
Because to me, that album was a little weird at the time, but like in the best way possible. Like that dance music was not as mainstream as it is now at all. Yeah. And I feel like she almost helped push the needle. And that's when Madonna is the best, when she's the one deciding ahead of time what's going to be big soon.
It was a great blend of, I mean, it was a really cohesive album. It was produced effectively by one person, Stuart Price.
That's important.
And the whole thing had a really cohesive sound. In fact, they put out two different versions of the album. One that was the normal album where there's actually spaces between songs.
Okay, yeah.
And then they put out one album that
It's like a whole mix?
It was just a mix, a continuous in the mix.
I didn't know that, and now I'm going to listen to that.
Which, it's just like, and it was hailed as a return, like Madonna going back to the dance floor.
Yep.
Her roots. And it was a great blend of sort of kind of like some love songs, but also songs that were kind of vague and nebulous, where they could be about her spirituality, they could be about getting older, but because of the way they were written and because of how the songs were structured, you kind of felt like you were just sort of getting lost in the emotion, and the words weren't obvious, and it was still kind of cryptic, which is kind of what Ray of Light did.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like you could say a lot of those things about Ray of Light.
And since then, she's been like, oh, let me work with Justin and Timbaland on Hard Candy. Let me work with a bunch
Nikki
of dance
and
people.
MIA.
And it's just like, oh, just... I really want you to just do Madonna.
Yeah.
Do a Madonna record.
Yep.
And make it the best Madonna record you can.
I think she still 100% can, to answer the question that you came in with. Like, yep. I don't think that that's out of reach at all.
No. What about you?
Well, I'm actually really excited for new music from Ariana Grande.
Oh,
because,
yes.
You know, it's been quite a tumultuous time since she released Dangerous Woman, to say the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we talked about this on last week's podcast, too, with her performance on March for Our Lives. And then she also really spearheaded the Manchester concert as well, because of having, you know, becoming part of a story that she didn't choose to become a part of, with the bombing outside of her concert. And I feel like there's just going to be... I already loved Ariana Grande, but now I feel like she has all this substance to work with that, you know, maybe we have not seen from her yet. Like, she's always made incredible pop music with great producers, but I feel like she's probably going to come in with a perspective because of all these huge things that she's kind of been thrust into,
mm-hmm.
that she's never come with before, but also, like, make it amazing pop music. So
right.
I feel like... It could be, like, it could be a big, huge, like, opus for her.
Right.
I think. And I'm excited about that.
It's she's had to do a lot of growing up. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it could be that blend, kind of like what we said about Madonna, who, by the way, Ariana loves.
Yes.
It could be that blend of sort of gravitas and growing up, and combined with maybe some sort of feeling of having a greater purpose.
Yeah, but to a Cashmere Cat beat.
Yes.
Like, that's what I want.
You know, with a Max Martin, like, vocal treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, that's music at its best can, you know, not only make you want to dance on the dance floor, but also sort of move you in other emotional ways.
And not to... I feel like Katy Perry's been through a lot. Like, people have, like, really given her a hard time for her last album. I think that's what she was intending to do and maybe didn't quite land with it. And I think Ariana has a chance, because of where she is in her career and her fandom right now, to, like, actually bring that purposeful pop that Katy was kind of aiming for.
Yeah. Well, what about Britney Spears?
I mean, Britney.
I assume she's working on new music.
She always is.
She always is, but who knows? Her last two albums kind of basically fizzled. Glory in 2016 and Britney Jean in 2013, both of which were released, you know, when she was on her sort of Vegas epic residency at Planet Hollywood, you know, in the Access Theater with the you know, Britney show. What was the name of the band?
Piece
of Me. I only saw the show.
Britney show.
I saw the show twice. I should know, for God's sakes. I mean, she was able to squeak out one top 40 Hot 100 hit each with those albums. Make Me from Glory and Work Bitch from Britney Jean. But that's kind of mediocre in the grand scheme of Spears things.
Right.
What will it take to get Britney back on track? Is it... I mean...
To be fair, I liked a lot of those songs, actually, like, from the last album, but it didn't feel like it got any sort of push.
It didn't land.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to capture the attention of people these days.
I think.
I mean, because everything is so hip-hop and rap-driven right now, and the only sort of pop stars that are kind of really breaking through are, like, Ed Sheeran, you know, which we mentioned earlier, Ollie Alexander had a dream of Ed Sheeran and Britney, so maybe Britney should call up Ed. But I don't know, what would it take? I don't want her, like, she tried to do a song with G-Eazy with Make Me, and that still didn't really land.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, I mean, make an album you believe in and see if it works.
I think talking about Madonna is a good lead in to all of this. It's like, it's a hard, like, road to travel for a pop star past a certain point in her career.
Right. And Britney, you know, believe it or not, like, it's now been 20 years of her career.
And honestly, I think she's in an amazing place with Vegas, et cetera. Like, I feel like people, like, I think that she's been able to, like, celebrate what she did, and that's what people think of now, as opposed to, like, the bad stuff from, like, a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she's kind of reclaimed her story and her, like, pop, you know, kingdom. But at the same time, I don't know, like, whether she'll have that hit album or hit song again.
Yeah. Funny, like, when you think of, like, career, you know, pop music stars 20 years into their career, it's hard for anyone to maintain that kind of relevancy.
Not everyone's going to be Cher cranking out, like, a hit a decade. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and those are anomalies.
Yeah.
The Bruce Springsteens, Barbara Streisands, you know, Madonna's, Cher's of the world are anomalies, and they're anomalies for a reason.
Yeah.
So I have hope for Britney.
Indeed.
What about you?
Well, this seems like a good transition into my complete and utter long shot that I'd like to discuss. I mean, this month, end of April, NSYNC's getting a star on the Walk of Fame.
Okay, that is like the longest of long shots.
I told you it was a long shot, but here's the deal. Justin's album, kind of sad. Like, I love Justin so much, and I did not really, like, embrace this album. And I'm like, what if he, like, just completely surprised everyone, because no one would expect it, and just did a one-off project? What if it was even an EP or something? I know this is a long shot, but, like, imagine, because, like, the last NSYNC album, Celebrity, so many good songs, because they finally, like, rose to this point where, like, they got to work with Neptunes and, like, these, you know, hot producers at the time, instead of kind of doing the, you know, more pure pop sort of cheeseball-y sort of things from their first two albums.
Uh-huh.
What if they came back and they are, like, NSYNC, you know, the people who sold the most albums until Adele came along? And all these, like, hot producers were going to make NSYNC music again. It could be kind of fun.
No, I don't doubt that.
I'm just putting it into the universe, Keith.
See, at least my wishful thinking items were actually things that were possible.
At least there's a peg here because of the star. Like, that is the only thing I'm
clinging
to. They're
getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, yeah.
I'm totally... And, like, you know, Beyonce came back for that one Destiny's Child album. It wasn't that big of a deal, but she came back for it. And, like, maybe just one, give them one NSYNC. And I don't want a reunion tour. I don't want, like, a whole thing.
Sure you do.
I just want one, like, last moment. Keith is very skeptical.
I'm trying to think of creatively how that would actually be executed. And the only thing I can think of is, like, you know, if they did something where it was, like, you know, like a one-off charity single,
right?
Or if it was,
yeah,
like,
you're right, if you it know, had like a bigger meaning.
Yeah because think of it in the era of everything being rebooted lately.
Yeah.
Roseanne,
yeah.
Will and Grace, Murphy Brown is coming back next year.
Yeah, I saw that.
There was an article I read, I think it was at the Hollywood Reporter, where they said, you know, a reboot of Roseanne and Full House, sorry.
Well, there is that, too.
I'm getting to that in a second. A reboot of Roseanne and Will and Grace, whether executed correctly or not, at least had a guise of, we're coming back with some sort of purpose.
Right.
Like, Roseanne in the 80s was a sitcom that had a commentary on a specific
blue collar,
middle America, and Will and Grace was, like, you know, a show about two gay people, you know, and how they navigated sort of life in a very comedic way.
Yeah.
And when you bring both those shows back today, you know, like 10 and 20 years respectively later, there's a different kind of viewpoint.
Yeah.
And the same can sort of be said for Murphy Brown, you know, sort of, you know, news and how that has changed so much in the past 30 years. But something like Fuller House, what's the point of bringing
it's
that
literally
back?
Nostalgia.
It's total nostalgia. So NSYNC, if it's just nostalgia, Justin probably has zero interest.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't need to do it. I'm making a lot of money
already. To your point, like, the only reason he's doing this ceremony for the star on the Walk of Fame is that he's currently on tour.
And he'll happen to be in town at the time.
Exactly. Like, he'll be in L.A. for the tour.
So there needs to be a greater purpose if that means, like, you're doing a one-off tribute song to someone. Yeah. If maybe they do a one-off performance somewhere, great. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm like, should I go through all of mine or should I just, like, skip to my wishful thinkings?
Well, I'd love to hear your wishful thinkings because we obviously just unearthed my NSYNC long shot.
Well, I have three wishful thinkings and I'll go over them quickly.
Okay.
Will the Rolling Stones finally give us their first new studio album of original material since 2006? They dropped a blues covers album in 2016, Blue and Lonesome, which performed well, considering it was a blues album, and it even earned a Grammy nomination. Maybe that kind of reception warmed the band to the idea of doing a full album of original material.
Maybe.
They like touring and making money.
Yeah.
Will they do new music? And I think with any sort of older band, a veteran band, you're always struggling with that. Why do new music if no one in our audience wants to hear it?
Yep.
And they only want to hear the hits. And
it's going to be a headache for Keith and Mick to get back in the studio together and come to some compromise.
Famously, you know, they don't...
Cantankerous.
Yeah, cantankerous, yes. But, you know, they get along well enough in certain circumstances.
When they're performing.
Yeah. Will Fleetwood Mac ever do a new studio album together?
Mm.
Stevie Nicks is clearly the holdout at this point in the five-piece, having made it pretty clear that she doesn't want to do a Mac album, though she enjoys going on tour with the band and making lots of cash. In 2017, she told Rolling Stone that, quote, making a record isn't all that much fun, end quote, referring to...
Once again, getting in the studio and compromising with all these people when you like to have your own artistic vision.
Yes. And the year before that, I believe, she told us on the Pop Shop podcast, quote, do you want to take a chance of going in and setting up in a room for like a year and having a bunch of arguing people and then not wanting to go on tour because you just spent a year arguing? Or do you just want to go on tour because you know that you have fun up there and you love doing shows, end quote.
It's pretty good perspective, although Keith wants an album. Keith wants new music.
I don't know what this whole year-long thing she's talking about thing. I mean... come on, girl. We have technology. And my last wishful thinking, and I think this one is kind of up there with the NSYNC thing, but slightly more attainable, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Can we get a new album from Guns N' Roses with Axl Rose, Slash, and Duff McKagan? It would be, you know, the three of them have been on tour on the Not In This Lifetime tour for, like, it seems like the past 2 years.
Yes. It seems like it because it has been.
And they're still touring this year.
Yes.
It would be their first album together since the covers album, The Spaghetti Incident, in 1993. And they haven't put out a new studio album of original material together since Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 in 1991.
That's wild.
I think, you know, with a band like that, they're like, why do we do... You know, I think you would want to be creatively fulfilled to do new music. It's like, you know, wouldn't you want to do new music if you're a creative person? And wouldn't you feel stifled if all you're doing is like every night, Sweet Child of Mine, again, again, and again?
Yeah.
And again. It's like, can we do a new riff? Can we excite the people? Can we do it one more time?
All three of those examples all come back to the same thing, though. It's like they know that like they have this very delicate dynamic among all of these people. And if they dare try to make music again, that's when things get, like, feathers get ruffled.
Yeah.
And then they no longer want to spend time with these people. And then the cash train is, like, comes into the station.
The cash train is like, crash.
So, one album that we know for sure is coming, and we are definitely looking forward to, is Years and Years' second full-length studio album, which is on the way this summer. It's the follow-up to their debut set, Communion, which was released back in 2015 and earned 4 top 40 hits on the official UK singles chart.
Just 4.
That's all.
But we definitely know that album is coming.
Yes.
And so, obviously, we're looking forward to it. And speaking of Years and Years, conveniently enough, now it's time for our interview with the Axe frontman, Ollie Alexander. In our interview, we talk about Years and Years' elaborate new video for Sanctify, which is the first single from their forthcoming album, and how Ollie says he wanted to go as big, crazy, and dramatic as they could with the clip. And did they? plus, Ollie talks about how he's, quote, holding out, end quote, to work with Rihanna, and how he recently had a dream, as we said earlier, about Ed Sheeran collaborating with Britney Spears. Don't we all have dreams like that?
Pop dreams.
So take a listen to our chat with Ollie Alexander. So don't break. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast, Ollie Alexander of Years and Years. How's it going?
Oh, hi. I'm good, thank you. I'm excited to be here on your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. You're calling in from London, right? Are you somewhere else more exciting and extravagant than London?
I'm calling from London, yeah. But London can be exciting and extravagant.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to diminish London's qualities. That's not what I intended on saying there.
Speaking of exciting and extravagant, you just released your new single and video for Sanctify, and the video is pretty extravagant, with special effects and lots of extras and choreography. Was this really like fulfilling a pop dream for you with this video?
Oh, yes, definitely. I just wanted to go as big as we could, as crazy as we could, as dramatic as we could, because how many people get to make a second album in their lives, you know? How many people get to make a music video? So I was just like, okay, we've got the time. We're just going to really go for it. So that's what we did.
Yeah, did you like our segue there where we just jumped right in to, like, started to ask you, like, we go from London extravagance to the video. Let's talk about the video. We're really
nice. Segues. I liked it.
We're slick with our segues here. Well, in the video, where you're one of the few humans left in a world of androids, it's titillating in a certain way, especially with your performing a choreographed dance for a rather stoic audience. Are we to assume that the androids don't know how to dance in the video, and that's why you've been sort of brought in?
Ooh, well, I very much am enjoying that this is, you're giving me this interpretation, and I wouldn't want to disclose too much or reveal anything which may be coming later down the line. But I think the androids definitely want to be more human.
Oh, okay. I was like waiting for extra, and you're like, no, I'm going to stop right there. I thought it was interesting because it was like, you know, I was wondering, is this supposed to be, you know, illustrative of how a human is supposed to move or can move, or was it also meant to be, you know, kind of like sexually charged in a way, or was it kind of all those things combined?
Yeah, I think it's kind of everything combined. There was like, you know, when I was kind of dreaming up the whole visual concept and, you know, imagining a storyline about this sort of human being who's one of the few remaining humans in this android society, and like what would happen there, you know, and it touches on a lot of my kind of thoughts on, you know, technology and how that affects our humanity, but also like as a queer performer, like how, you know, I move through different spaces, like as a performer as well. So there's like a lot that's kind of going into it. But you know, and also I'm a performer, and it's a music video, so I wanted it to kind of like be heightened, and I don't know, kind of maybe sort of be a bit unexpected for people.
And you mentioned that there's more to come down the line, because this video is the first part of a series of videos telling a story set in this fictional world of Palo Santo. So how many more videos do you have planned for this series?
As many as I can get budget for. but there's definitely a couple more, because we've already shot a lot. So there's definitely a good chunk that's coming your way soon.
Yeah, I feel like we're asking all the questions you have to be very secretive about, but do you know when that next video might be on the way?
Oh, when the next one? Soon. Oh, it's so annoying. I'm so sorry. It won't be too long, though.
Sometime in 2018 it will come out.
Yes.
I think if viewers are watching closely, or I mean not even that too closely, and at the beginning of the video there are sort of this is a quick cut of images that you see that are not in the video but look like they are probably from kind of future installments. So, you know, Eagle Eye watchers can sort of freeze frame the video and be like, oh, I wonder what's happening in that scene in an upcoming video, perhaps.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. I would love it for people to do that. Go do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think, you know, you mentioned this a moment ago, sort of obliquely, you know, do you think much about how, you know, about your influence and impact as an out gay pop star signed to a major label? Do you sort of think about the kind of influence that you have in that capacity?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had a few years now of being, you know, an out artist and speaking out on, you know, being gay, and also, and so I think I've got, I suppose, like a bit more of kind of, I feel a bit more comfortable in that sort of outspoken role. And, you know, I do think having a platform is a privilege, and, you know, it's an opportunity for you to try and, you know, encourage positive change. And, you know, I think anybody should try and do that. You know, and I found it very meaningful to engage with activism and really sort of be outspoken on the issues that I care about. And I think it's good that I'm accountable for what I say in a public forum. You know, I think that I do have a responsibility to be aware of that. But, you know, I think it would be a bit much. I don't know if I started thinking like too much. I don't know about sort of what everything I do or say has, you know, influence on or over. I might never do anything, but
obviously,
do you know what I mean? At the same time, I think it's we still have quite a few, I mean, we're seeing more and more out artists, which is amazing, but there's, you know, we still have a long way to go in terms of like actually representing our community. So I think it's important to kind of keep kind of that in mind. So that's another reason, you know, to keep speaking out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm personally thrilled, you know, to see that we have artists like Troye Sivan and you and MNEK, and, you know, everyone is kind of, you know, we're in this state where now where we're trying to make, you know, small steps of progress and sort of painting with all the colors of the wind, you know, so to speak, which is something that, you know, yeah. I didn't have when I was younger, and, you know, perhaps you didn't see that, you know, when you were younger as well. So I just think it's pretty awesome, yeah. You know?
I know, it's like, I haven't seen Love, Simon yet, but me and my friend were talking about it, about how, you know, like, oh, having a teen movie with like a gay, you know, like lead character, and imagine if we'd had that when we were kids, when we were teenagers, and genuinely got kind of emotional.
Absolutely. I need to see it, but I also have seen Call Me By Your Name 3 times, so I'm sort of a bad test group there. I read that Sanctify actually was written pretty early on in the process of working on the new album. Do you remember where you were at and kind of like when you had the aha moment of for the song?
I do. I was in LA and I was writing with a friend of mine, Tom Hull, who goes by Kid Harpoon, and we were working on a song and it wasn't really coming together that well. And then we were like, oh, should we just try doing something different? Take a break. And he was just like cycling through synth sounds and this sort of like almost eastern sounding flute kind of preset came up, and he played this little riff that became the like, oh no, that bit. And I just heard it and I was like, oh, that's really good, I want to write a song to this. And I think And I'd always wanted to write a song that was about this specific thing, about these experiences that I'd had with these guys who identified as straight. And I just thought it was, you know, I really wanted to write a song about it. So I was like, I'm just going to do it to this. And it all came together like in an afternoon. So it's one of those fortunate moments.
Wow.
And, you know, coming off of the debut full-length Communion and all the success of that, did you guys feel pressure going into this second album? And if so, did that impact your creativity in any way?
It definitely was, like, a completely different, like, situation. Because, okay, so on your first album, it feels like you basically have your entire life to make that record. Because, you know, you've just got so much time and so many experiences, and you've never made one before. But then the second album, you know, we toured the first one like 2 years, and then it was like, oh, okay, we've got like 18 months to make our next album, which doesn't really sound, it sounds like a long time, but it went by so fast. And I definitely felt it was quite overwhelming, thinking, oh, we're never going to be able to, you know, pull this off. And it at times was like a real struggle, but at the same time it was really, I don't know, I was very inspired by everything that happened in the last few years, and having the opportunity to kind of do it again was really exciting. So I just wanted it to be the best it could be, you know, so I put a lot of pressure on myself as well. I guess in answer to your question, it was quite a lot of pressure.
Since you have this video series, is the album, you know, sort of also a conceptual piece? Like, can we consider the album like a concept album, or am I taking that a step too far in a way?
I wouldn't say it was a concept album, sort of like musically. It's definitely there were songs really that just were inspired by things that happened to me in the last kind of year or so. And also some stuff, I don't know, I think because you gain more confidence when you're writing more songs, and then, you know, there's just all these things kind of like would like float to the surface of my brain, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I want to write a song about that. So that's kind of what the songs are. But then, yeah, I wanted to kind of just put them in this crazy world and tell a different story visually.
Some nuts and bolts questions. Does the album have a name, and do we know like what month it's coming out yet?
All I can say is it's going to be the summer, and I can't tell you the name.
Well, you could tell us the name, but I don't think you're probably allowed to right now.
Someone will, I don't know, something bad will happen if I say it.
Yes, we know how this game works.
since you're on the Pop Shop podcast, we have to ask about your love of pop music. Early Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and Destiny's Child and Christina Aguilera. Do you dream of ever collaborating with one or all of these pop stars?
Well, you just reminded me that this is a bit separate. Last night I had a dream that Ed Sheeran collaborated with Britney. I just don't know why I had that dream. But
that
should
happen.
I was like slightly distressed when I woke up, because I was just like, what has happened in my dream? And did I just like wish fulfill something that I wasn't aware of? Because I don't think I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about that collaboration, but I would kind of be down to hear that.
Yes.
What was the collaboration like? Was it a ballad? Was it a banger? Like, I need specifics here.
I don't know. He was Ed Sheeran was playing an acoustic guitar. That's all I know. But he does do that quite a lot. So, But yeah. What was the initial question?
What about you collaborating with any of those people instead of Ed Sheeran?
My dream is Rihanna. Like, always has been, always will be. But I'm kind of holding out for her, I guess. But then, there's so many amazing people, and just it's everyone is so busy all the time.
that's always a good excuse.
Again, all I'll say.
You're like, it turns out they're all on your album. We're about to wrap up, but I do want to ask, you know, there's a common thread between a lot of those pop artists is that Max Martin has worked with a lot of those folks. Have you worked with Max in any capacity?
Ooh.
Might he be on the new album, or maybe in your plans in the future?
No,
perhaps?
He's not.
That you can say.
I feel like I'm letting you down.
That's okay. No, yeah, goodness, right. No.
But maybe in the future, I would love that.
Let's make it happen. Well, this has been such a pleasure chatting, Ollie. Thank you so much for taking the time, and best of luck with everything in the future. And we can't wait to hear the new album.
Oh yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You don't have to be straight with me. I see what's underneath your mask.
Thank you again to Ollie for calling us up to chat. Can't wait to hear the new album and see how the rest of this...
Rollout.
The sequels to this video. What will happen next?
Yes.
What will the androids want to do with him? I don't know. And now it's time for the chart stat of the week. This week in 1964, the Beatles held the entire top five on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Wow.
A feat that had never been achieved and has yet to be duplicated. Finally, a record that people have yet to break on the Hot 100. And then it probably, well,
Give Nicki Minaj a second.
Let's never say never. In the world of streaming, anything is possible now. On the chart dated April 4th, 1964, the Fab Four saw its single Can't Buy Me Love zoom from number 27 to number 1 to become the band's third number 1. It bumped the group's own She Loves You down from number 1 to number 3, while the group's first number 1, I Want to Hold Your Hand, moved 2 to 4. The top 5 was filled out by Twist and Shout at its peak of number 2, and Please Please Me at number 5. Wow. The entire top 5 were all Beatles songs.
Beatlemania, I believe, was what they called that.
Yeah. crazily enough, not only did Can't Buy Me Love replace She Loves You at number 1, but She Loves You replaced I Want to Hold Your Hand at number 1. Hmm. That's another record that has yet to be beat. No one has succeeded themselves twice atop the list. A number of acts, most recently with Justin Bieber, have replaced themselves at number 1.
That was Despacito into DJ Khaled's I'm the One.
Yeah,
right?
It might have been the other way around.
I think it was because I thought that DJ Khaled snuck in and then Despacito came back, or was it a different?
It was those two songs. A number of acts like Bieber have replaced themselves at number 1, but to do it with 3 songs in a row, no, only the Beatles have done that. So there you have it. This week in 1964, Beatlemania had fully set in on the Billboard Hot 100 as the Beatles controlled the entire top 5 on the chart, a record that has yet to be matched. You know, a thing I didn't put into the chart side of the week scripting there, kind of the only way that the Beatles were able to have such a stranglehold on the charts at the time was because, back in 1964, in order to be on the chart, you had to have a commercially available single in the marketplace. You had to go to a record store and buy a 7-inch vinyl single. Ooh, those are fun times. But at the time, they had a number of singles that were on different labels because in the U.S., like, their singles were on – obviously they were on Capitol Records, but they also had stuff on VJ. There was another label or two that had their stuff. So all these different singles from multiple labels were all competing together in the marketplace. So, you know – normally, a label wouldn't want that many singles at once out. They would want you to maybe buy the one album.
Right.
But because they had all these different competing labels with all these different competing singles, they were able to have all of them on the chart at the same time.
Yeah.
That also doesn't happen anymore either. Mm-hmm. You know, so what we do have in exchange now is someone like a Drake or a Kendrick Lamar dropping an album and everyone streams it and all the tracks show up on the chart.
Yeah, so like 10, 11, 12, whatever songs end up on the Hot 100, but not like concentrated in the top 5, like that.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Give it time. As streaming gets more and more popular, maybe that, you know, maybe something like that could happen in the next few years.
Yeah.
Records were meant to be broken.
Cardi B had 3 in the top 10, right?
I believe so,
yeah. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I think it was all her first three
songs.
Yeah.
Damn, Cardi.
Yeah. Hmm. Any parting words, Katie?
Well, I mean, I feel like we definitely should go out on some Beatles music. All that Beatles talk.
Good golly, which one?
Well, one of those top 5 singles. I mean, I've partial to Twist and Shout because of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Let's do Twist and Shout.
All right.
See you guys next time.
Bye. Baby, shake it up, baby. Twist and shout. Twist and
shout. Come on, come on, come on, come on, baby. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.